Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From a legal standpoint, from a everything standpoint, if I am able to do something I've always wanted to do, and that is run a contest in which the winner goes to the Knick playoff game with me. Which is like a double-edged sword.
Why?
You get to go to a Knick playoff game, but you sit next to the ultimate Knick hater, the president of the coalition of Knick haters.
Oh, you as the Knick hater. So me. You're going to bring someone who's going to be rooting for the Knicks.
Correct.
While you are rooting for whoever they're playing.
That is correct. Now, I got to figure out legally if that even works, if that's even a possibility. If not, I'm going to invite Tiki Barber to make, and then Loogie's just going to have to deal with it. And then Tiki gets to make a business decision. Does he want to go to the playoff game with me? Or is he like, you know what? Screw it. I'm all right. I don't know. That's a Tiki decision. So we'll see. But anyhow, Kendrick, I'm sorry. What was your point?
Well, fair enough. Well, as a Nets fan, I will say this as you're leading up to the top 20 all-time picks. I know a guy that got shafted here, which is one of my all-time favorites, is Brook Lopez. And this is how down the Nets are in this city. He's a franchise-leading scorer, franchise-leading block. They sucked when he was there, but he – borderline Hall of Famer, and I know he has no shot after hearing the four yesterday.
Yeah, it's tough to imagine what Mattingly, David Wright, and Tiki have said. No offense to Brooke.
When I heard those four names, I was like, all right, see you later.
Right. But how in long terms was he even here? I don't even remember how long he was here.
He was here for like 8 years, pretty much.
Yeah, that's close.
Not a good run.
So, Tiki, you've made it a comment a couple of times about Brandon Nimmo moving over to left field and how that was a sign that he might not be here long-term and that they were evaluating everybody. I wrote an interesting article last night, and last week I called about, you know, how sports have become positionless. And the article was about the Brewers and how they have a bunch of outfielders who actually can play center field.
Interesting.
And the article goes on to talk about how later in games, center fielders, because they have to track down more fly balls in the outfield than left and right field, they have to back up the left fielder and the right fielder.
Right.
They have to run to cover stolen bases, which is becoming a bigger thing in the game, that they're tiring out a little bit more. Now, the old school fan like myself would roll my eyes and say, give me a break.
Right.
But the numbers back it up in the sense of maybe exerting too much energy throughout the season in center field. Is it possible? And again, now that David Stearns has kind of shown that he hit with most of his pitchers, Beatty is coming and playing. You know, the first few days of the season, first week and a half or whatever it was tough. But now I'm starting to think, did he move Nimmo to protect him to left field? Because it's a lot more opportunity for him to succeed at the plate.
It's interesting. I didn't even think about, like, the physical wear and tear of playing center field. I mean, we talked about it with Judge with the Yankees a couple of years ago when he was playing a lot of center field. But if Brandon Nimmo, who's getting older, and he's got to run more, and I don't know if they do this in baseball yet. They're doing it in football. They've been doing it for a while in football where they have these GPS trackers that basically tell you how far you run. Soccer's been doing it for years as well because there's a direct correlation to how much wear and tear running you have on your body to when you're going to get injured. They can almost predict it when you're going to get hurt. So maybe that is what David Stearns was thinking. I mean, I just looked at it as he is your starting center fielder. You just paid him as just starting center fielder, and now you move him to left field, and you put Harrison Bader there, which didn't make sense. But now rethinking it as he did as well, it's probably to protect him that he is in the lineup
for a
consistent amount of time.
I think it's more about they're better defensively this way. And number two, a lot of their youth, Drew Gilbert, even Jet Williams, will probably project as center fielders anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so Brandon Nimmo's future is in the corner outfield to begin with. But a very interesting thought by Kendrick. It is a little after 4 o'clock here on this Tuesday, and it is time for session number two as we continue to reveal the Evan and Tiki top 20, the New York top 20, the top 20 draft picks of the last 50 years. Keep in mind, the last 50 years. How did we come about this list? I didn't make this list. Tiki didn't make this list. Actually, Tiki
made
the list.
I voted.
He voted.
And I made the list.
And he made the list.
Which made my vote mean something.
That's true. We allowed you last week to go to WFAN.com/draft, and you voted. Plus, there is a panel of distinguished dignitaries. I'm still not aware of who's on this panel, who also place a vote. So it's half you, half the panel, and they have come up with this list. Yesterday, we revealed that Phil Simms was number 20, that Don Mattingly was number 19, that Tiki Barber was number 18, and that David Wright was number 17. That caused a lot of controversy. Hopefully today, everyone will be a little bit calmer. So let's start it off. Brought to you by H.L. Gross, Trulers of Garden City. Thank you, H.L. Gross. Let's start it off with number 16.
Number 16. With the ninth pick in the first round of the 1986 NHL Draft, the New York Rangers select Brian Leetch, Boston College.
Leetch will chase it down at the other end. Leetch playing at a plus 19, the best in the playoffs, and his 33 points also number one. Messier moving in. Messier to the middle, looking for help. Dropped it off. Zubac.
Wow. You can hear that Gordon rot. That was game seven. That was the first goal of game seven against Vancouver.
Sean, you were reliving it.
Oh, not a corporate crowd that night, Teak.
Brian Leetch at number 16. We all feel good about that. Hall of Famer.
Does that work?
Yeah.
I'm assuming there's 15 non-hockey players left. We'll see.
I can tell you that's not the case. All right, let's hear number 15.
Number 15. With the fourth pick in the first round of the 1974 NHL Draft, the New York Islanders select Clark Gillies, Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
A minute gone by. Here comes Gillies. He shoots. He scores! Clark Gillies!
What a goal. Got the jump on Brad Park down the left wing. It's all over. The New York Islanders in overtime defeated the Boston Bruins. A happy group. What a goal by Clark Gillies.
Gotta respect that. The great Clark Gillies, another Hall of Famer.
What year was that?
That was the winner in 70. Wasn't the year they won the cup. I think that was in 78 or 79 where he scored the game winner against the Flyers. Clark Gillies was a great player. He was the captain of the Islanders and then gave it up and didn't feel like he could be the captain. But he was a tough guy. He was a power forward back in the day. And then obviously he was a very big part of that dynastic Islander team that won four consecutive Stanley Cups. You can't argue that.
I was just asking for the play-by-play. Because the play-by-play sounded like it was from the 50s.
I know.
I don't know what's coming in the next two. And clearly Clark Gillies is a big part of a dynasty team. And I assume we have to take care of the Islander fan.
It's a dynasty, dude.
Brian Leetch had double the amount of points in the NHL. Won a Conn Smythe, the MVP of the playoffs. Clark Gillies had four shots to do that. Did not. He had to secede. Mark Messier is the freaking captain of the Rangers.
Yeah.
Brian Leetch is definitely a better draft pick than Clark Gillies.
Let's take a deep breath here. Okay, first of all, Clark Gillies was before both of our times.
I understand
and
that.
And what's beautiful about this list is it respects history. It doesn't just respect the last, 30 years. It's
50 years.
The last 50 years. I think what puts Gillies above him, because you're right, I could sit there on Hockey Reference, I could look at the numbers and say, what are we doing here? Four Stanley Cups and an enforcer on a Stanley Cup team.
Without the eye test. All you can do is look at the stats.
Yeah, like you have to at least.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I get it. This is a little Ranger Honor thing, but you got to respect who he is and what team he was on.
I'm being very careful not to hate because I respect the heck out of those Islander dynasties. I really do. I've had to hear about him my whole life, and I respect it. I've met Clark Gillies, was a great man. I'm sorry. If we are doing the statistical rabbit hole, Brian Leetch should not be punished for not being on a dynasty the way Clark Gillies is. He still won a more iconic cup, I would argue, and was the MVP of the team during it And again, all the actual stats from a defensive position tell you he's the better player.
Sean's turning red again.
I know. Is it just like I am now convinced that we have put together this list with whatever crack committee you found to needle me for days on end?
It's not to needle you. It has nothing to do with you. It's a genuine list.
You could just accept it instead of getting upset about it.
If Brian Leach's prime was played on the Islanders on those dynasty teams, who's the higher?
Brian Leach.
Leach. Okay. But he wasn't.
So that's it. So now just championships are the one that matters.
No, I don't think it. Well, first of all, ironic coming from a Yankee fan. All of a sudden now, championships don't matter. Well, that's amazing.
You know, we already saw David Wright got World Series homers. That's what put him over Don Mattingly yesterday.
We've got two more. All right, calm down. I don't know what's coming up next. Let's hear about number 14.
Number 14. With the first pick in the first round of the 1980 MLB draft, the New York Mets select Darryl Strawberry, Crenshaw High School, Los Angeles, California.
The sellout crowd at Shea Stadium, standing and cheering as loud as they can. Strawberry hit it over the center field fence. His second two-run homer of the ball game. He now has 12 home runs on the year. That was a majestic home run. Boy, did he launch that.
What a great call by Bob Murphy. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting about Straw for a second. I'm thinking about the Murph. Hearing that iconic voice. Look, Darryl Strawberry was an iconic figure in this town Met fans in the 80s. He had the must-see at-bat. And there's very few guys you can say that about. There's a lot of great players, but even sometimes great players don't have the must-see at-bat that Darryl had.
Well, he was amazing because even his misses looked amazing.
Oh, yes.
His swing was just so beautiful.
And even as a kid, because it's funny with Darryl, he left as I'm like, not even knowing baseball, but sort of figuring it out. Like, I remember hearing the news about him going to L.A., so I certainly remember in L.A. I remember him in San Francisco briefly, obviously his time with the Yankees. I would always sit there imitating his batting stance. Mm-hmm. I'll do it right now. Here we go, the wave into the bat, the elbow out.
Uh-huh.
You got to admit, there's a pretty good Darryl imitation I got going on right now. I'm not going to do the swing, because that would not do him justice.
You're not standing upright enough.
Yeah, no.
He was really upright.
You're right.
Right.
He's also a lot taller than me.
Exactly.
All right, here it is. Number 13. Who finished ahead of those three guys?
Number 13. With the fifth pick in the first round of the 1982 MLB draft, the New York Mets select Dwight Gooden, Hillsborough High School, Tampa, Florida.
Dwight Gooden has struck out 16 to tie his career high. He has won his 13th game in a row. It is his 13th complete game and 6th shutout of the year. His record is now 19-3.
You know what? And look, this isn't about you versus me, him versus you. As a Met fan, that feels right.
Right.
Doc Gooden being there.
Right. Well, them together.
Them being together and Doc being slightly ahead.
Slightly ahead. Doc got his number retired.
And Darryl's about to. He's got 2 months to wait.
June 1st, right?
That's right.
June
1st. He's got to wait a little bit. Anyhow, Doc Gooden has a message for all of us.
Hey, WFAN listeners, and Evan and Tiki, this is Doc Gooden, and I just wanted to thank you all for voting for me as number 13 on the top 20 draft picks in New York over the last 50 years.
Well, thank you, Doc. You're welcome. That's great to hear. I'm glad Doc appreciates that. Doc Gooden, it's funny. I'm thinking about Doc and Darryl because sometimes it's easier when you've got guys in the same sport. It's what led to the whole debate yesterday about Don Mattingly and David Wright. I think the slight tiebreaker that I give Doc are those extra 3 years. Hmm. And the fact that Darryl, I don't want to say he just decided to leave because the Mets didn't have an interest in bringing him back.
Well,
and that's a whole big debate about how that kind of broke apart. But those extra 3 years, at least for me as a younger Met fan, make a big difference because I remember Doc Gooden for those 3 years. Instead, Darryl obviously went to L.A.
I'll be interested when Darryl has his moment in June 1st if he'll say similar things.
That he wanted to come back?
I'm serious, about Doc. Because we know what was going on.
Yeah.
Right, with the ownership. And Doc pulled no punches when he talked about the Wilpons and how he wanted to make it right with the fans.
Yeah, I'm curious if Darryl Strawberry, after his time with the Mets, because remember, he left.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all convoluted on what happened. I've heard Darryl Strawberry say, Frank Cashman and the Mets didn't want me back. Okay, that's his perspective of things.
Which is very similar to what Doc was saying, that they did not want him anymore.
It's similar and different. Like, similar in that they didn't want him back, but different in that Darryl was still in his prime.
Yeah.
Like, the Mets made a business decision of, we're going to let him go. And the guy they ended up signing to replace him was Vince Coleman. What a brilliant decision that was. I don't know during all those tours after, like his return as a Dodger wearing number 44, that whole thing is weird, to the brief stint he had with the Giants, to him having his own off-the-field issues, to returning with the Yankees. I don't know if Darryl ever wanted to come back. That may be I don't know the answer. That may be one of the big differences. I don't know if Darryl tried to come back. Clearly, Doc Gooden made it clear he did want to come back.
We'll have to talk to Darryl in June then, or probably before June.
Yes.
Because he's going June 1st.
But he's going June 1st.
We'll get him on and we'll ask him. Because Doc made it clear he wanted to be back.
No doubt about it. But they both
see what Darryl said.
They were both represented very well on this list. So now we are down to number 12 through number 1. You'll get four more on Thursday at 4 o'clock, four more on Friday at 4 o'clock, and then the big grand finale reveal next Tuesday at 4 o'clock to find out who was the greatest draft pick in New York sports history. By the way, the reason we're not doing it tomorrow is we're like barely on the air. The Yankees play a 3 o'clock game. So there you go. There's your scheduling reasons for that. Let's go to Kenny in Staten Island. What's up, Kenny?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Always a pleasure.
What's up, man?
Listen, you talk about these playoff prices. Basically, yeah, they're through the roof, especially in New York. Even the Islander, I'm a big Islander fan. Even the Islander tickets get out of control.
Yeah.
So my thing is, and I've done it in the past. I've been to a ton of games, playoff games on the road. It's much cheaper. You can actually fly, get a hotel, and game ticket, basically for the price of a single game ticket back here in New York.
Yeah.
So I'll be heading. I'm probably going to hit the Carolina, hopefully, if there's a game 5, which there will be. This weekend I got plans. I can't make it, but no, I'll do the road trips.
By the way, Kenny, that's a great idea because I've experienced flying and driving to Raleigh, North Carolina. My family lives down there, and I know the prices down there are dirt cheap, like for tickets.
Yeah.
So you can sit in a great seat in Raleigh, North Carolina. So as long as you're okay to get down there and it takes time, he's right about that. That's number one. Number two, I have heard now, and this one, we'll see if it turns out to be the case. What I've heard in Philadelphia is that the Sixer fan is not as enthralled with this team.
Really?
As maybe the nation is to how dangerous they are.
Who's telling you that, Spike?
I have other people that I talk to in Philadelphia. I don't talk to that.
Is Spike on air now?
I don't talk to that.
Spike is on air.
Now. Is he?
I don't know. He's not here.
So he's working on air these days?
Actually, good for him. He was here today. Was he here today?
No.
No, that was here. It was yesterday.
No, today was a beautiful day. I had a good time today, so he was not here. I'm just kidding. I talked to him and others in Philadelphia because this is something we can't measure.
Well, yeah,
Where what is the interest level in a team? And like the comparison I'll give in New York is the year the Yankees got to the ALCS and Derek Jeter got hurt after they won that series against the Baltimore Orioles. I think that was 2012 was that season. No one had an interest in going to Yankee games. So those postseason games were dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe from afar you would hear that and say, well, why? I mean, the Yankees are in the midst of a run. The Philadelphia 76ers have had high expectations over the years. They've been to the second round of the playoffs every year but the pandemic year. So even though maybe I look at them and say, wow, they're dangerous, and NBA experts think that they're dangerous, the Sixer fan may look at this and say, you know what? With a 7 seed, maybe the 8 seed, depending on what happens in the play-in tournament, I don't know.
And let's also not forget that for 30-plus games this year, without Joel Embiid, they were just kind of average.
They were bad.
They were not good.
And
so the enthusiasm, which may have been there at the beginning of the season, you got the reigning MVP coming back, and you think you're going to do something great. He gets hurt. It's like, all right, we're not going anywhere.
Right.
And so, again, it's kind of like the Mets in a way. They got to prove it in order to get people interested in this postseason run. So if they go destroy the Miami Heat and then take a game away from the Knicks at home, then people will be interested in Philly.
Well, I went on Ticketmaster the other day. They're not sold out for game one. It's not. Or their game one. It would obviously be game three.
Right.
Like, there's plenty of tickets available, which leads me to think that the Knicks fan could potentially buy them up. The place will be sold out. There'll be a lot of Knicks fans there. Now, the prices are high.
Actually, Knicks fans do that.
Of course they do.
Seriously.
Like, I didn't think they would.
No, I'm saying do it. Right? Cause,
why wouldn't you?
Look, take an educated guess. Believe that they're going to beat the Miami Heat.
And then, buy the tickets now?
So do it now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, every day you wait. I mean, when's it? Thursday? It's Wednesday. Right?
Yeah.
So tomorrow, you're going to know for certain.
And look, worst case scenario, either they then lose the on Friday, they're not even in the playoffs, you get your money back, yeah. Or they win and then they play Boston, and you figure the Celtic fan will come down and buy the ticket.
That's a good point.
So what you're advising is the Knicks fan should buy
go
tickets
make some money, man.
In Philly right now.
Right, so you can go if you really want to, or you can sell.
Here's the one tricky part about that, and it's kind of what I alluded to earlier about when the games are. If you don't know the day of the week and you're commuting to Philadelphia, it's challenging.
But
like,
but it's not a crazy drive. I mean, maybe it's not for me because I'm in Jersey. It's an hour and 10 minutes or whatever it is. So it's simple. It's what it takes to get in the city some days.
Mm.
But if you're on the island or you're in Westchester, that's a different story. Connecticut, forget it.
And if it's a Tuesday night's far different than a Saturday night.
Right.
That's why the scheduling makes it difficult. But he is right. Like, if you're a Knicks fan, going to Philly may turn out to be cheaper. If you're a Ranger fan, going to Philadelphia, if they happen to play the Flyers, it's unlikely, or Washington, may be cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Flying to Raleigh, North Carolina, may be cheaper. That may be your way to see postseason games. More of your calls coming up, plus the latest on some of the educated rumors surrounding the New York football Giants and what they may do as we get closer and closer to the real draft. Plus, CP, the franchise, will stop by, and we'll talk plenty of Knick basketball as we get set for round number one. Listen to these numbers. You ready? Last year, the NHL draft on TV had 680,000 viewers on ESPN, 680. The MLB draft last year had 744,000 viewers on ESPN/MLB Network. All right. The NBA draft, which was on ESPN and ABC,
mm-hmm.
had 3.7 million.
Yeah. That's cheating because there's two networks.
That's absolute cheating. I agree with you. Last night's WNBA draft, 2.4 million viewers.
Wow.
So the WNBA draft not only destroyed the NHL and Major League Baseball, I could argue, based on what you said about the cheating, that they pretty much beat the NBA draft out.
That's a good point. Now, the NFL has got to be ridiculous, so it's not even in the same stratosphere.
So I looked up the NFL. It's not as ridiculous as you think.
Really?
It's not as high as you think. The average audience, like not adding everything together, like the average audience, because it's a multi-day event, what would your guess be?
I'd say 4.5 million.
Oh, okay. You're on the right track. Yeah. It's actually higher than that. I thought you thought, my apologies, I thought you were going to say like 20 million people.
That combines all the channels the NFL drafts on?
Yeah, the average audience was about 6.5 million people, which it is higher than the NBA, WNBA, but I'll tell you, that WNBA draft was a monster last night. It shows you, and this is what I'm so fascinated about. I don't have the answer. I don't have a strong opinion on the result because I genuinely don't know how this crosses over to the WNBA. Because Caitlin Clark is there now.
Yeah.
Now, I've seen these ticket prices. Like, they are through the roof to see her play basketball. I've seen the jersey sales. They are through the roof to buy her jersey. We just said the WNBA draft got a huge number last night. So the early returns tell you there's going to be a major impact on the WNBA.
Right. And the top two draft picks, Caitlin Clark was obviously number one to the Indiana Fever, which we all already knew. But the second pick of the draft, this girl Cameron Brink, I only know this because I saw it on social media. I don't know why I got fed it, but she basically grew up with Steph Curry.
Oh, really?
And her family and Steph's family were very tight. I think she went to Virginia Tech, which is where
she went to Stanford. She
went to Stanford, she did something at Tech. I forgot something she did at Tech, which is where Del Curry went to school. And so, like, she became famous last night in a way, simply because of the exposure, meaning because there were 2.4 million people watching for what everybody knew was inevitable, Caitlin Clark going number one, but then her story, which is also pretty damn cool. I mean, Steph and Dell and her family are tight. It's kind of awesome.
Caitlin Clark has such a powerful effect. She got me to do something I hadn't done in a year. Watch a highlight of Saturday Night Live. Haven't watched it in a long time. But Caitlin Clark showed up. She was on SNL. She did a funny routine with Michael Shea. Pretty good, by the way. It was pretty funny. And I was watching a clip of SNL for the first time in a year. So, man, that Caitlin Clark effect is real. Now, a couple of football thoughts, and we'll get back to your call. CP, the franchise, will join us in a few minutes, talk some Knick basketball with him. Right now, the voluntary workouts are going on, and I kind of brought this up yesterday, but I never got a full answer or never asked you this full question. As a player, like, do you judge your teammate if they're not at the voluntary workout?
Back when I was playing, no. Now, yes.
What's the difference? Like, why would it be more so now?
Because when I was playing, like you had access. Like you could just go. You could be around. You could talk to your coaches. You could, you wanted to do extra work. You could do all of it. You wanted to get some extra film study. Hey, coach, you know, tell me about X, Y. You could do that.
Mm.
The rules changed. And so now you can't do all that stuff, right? The off season is so truncated. And if you even have a little bit of an impropriety, you get penalized by the league for excessive training. And so I know it's voluntary, but it should be mandatory because that puts it on par with how it should be.
It's so not, because of the restriction, right, that makes it more imperative that you show up.
Here's the reality of the NFL, and it's why the product has suffered a little bit over the last few years. There's not enough teaching time.
Mm.
There's not enough learning that goes on because it gets smashed into these little short moments, and it's not physical. You can't put the pads on half the time. Hell, they don't even do two-a-days anymore in training camp. And so like there's just not enough time to learn all you need to be great. You can be okay. You can be serviceable. You can screw it up 30% of the time, but there's no time to be great. It's why the league has suffered. Mm. They don't realize it because they're protecting health.
Right.
But it's the reality of the game. You see it. It's why, like the Evan Neal situation that we pointed out multiple times last year, he's standing around blocking nobody.
Right.
And that's not because he's a bad player. It's just because he doesn't know what he's supposed to do. And if there is a doubt, then something bad is bound to happen. I think too many players have doubts when it comes to moments in games. And that starts in the offseason.
I'm just relieved Aaron Rodgers showed up because I believe Aaron Rodgers showed up and it's a non-story. Like no one's barely anyone's mentioning it. If Aaron Rodgers didn't show up though,
yeah,
it would have been a big deal.
Because he never showed up in Green Bay.
Right, and it would have been, he's already bored with the Jets a year in. Like I could see Sean right now spouting that crap.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm glad Aaron Rodgers is there. There's one other football thing I found fascinating. And you tell me, as someone who in a weird way could relate to this, but not fully, because when you were in the media while competing, you were signed by the Giants. You were never a free agent.
Yeah.
So when you did work on WFAN and you were doing like shows, I think Beningo had you on in the overnight, like you were a Giant.
Yeah.
But if someone called in, like if someone called in Tiki Bar, maybe they did, and said, hey, Tiki, I got a question. Yeah, what's up? I'm trying to remember what year you were doing this. 1999, 2000?
99 or so, yeah.
Yeah, and someone said, I want to trade. Let's trade this guy for that guy in football, your team. How the hell would you answer that question? Well, you're talking about your team.
Well, luckily back then, for me, nobody traded.
That's true. It was such a rare thing.
The only thing you could talk about really was, who do you want in free agency?
Right.
Or what position of need do you need? No, tell me about your offensive line or whatever. Things that I obviously didn't need an opinion because I knew the knowledge of.
Yes.
But it's different nowadays because trading is a big deal.
Yes.
The offseason is almost as interesting and dynamic as the regular season with player movement.
That's why I saw something yesterday, and I advise any Giant fan to watch this. I found it very entertaining. Justin Pugh, who is a free agent.
Yep, 33-year-old guard.
Was on the team last year. Remember that whole joke? I think it was on Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football when he's like, Justin Pugh, straight from the couch. Right off the couch. So Justin Pugh did a video in which he gives his opinion on what the Giants should do in the offseason and makes it very clear at the beginning of the video, hi, I hope you re-sign me. So like one thing Pugh is not doing is he's not retiring. Mm-mm. Like he's certainly setting himself up for his next career, but he still wants to play football and still thinks he can help the Giants, which I think he could. So Justin Pugh proposed a trade. And like normally, like if Sean proposes a trade or I propose a trade, it's like, okay, yeah, we're just fans proposing a trade. This is a guy who could be on the Giants, who was on the Giants last year, who is an active free agent, who said, here's what I would do for this offseason. And he laid out his entire plan. And the thing that jumped out at me, and I'm curious if you would do it, this is Justin Pugh's idea, is that the Giants should not take a quarterback, which you're already on the side of,
right?
Should call up John Lynch and offer the 6th overall pick in the draft to San Francisco for Brandon Ayuk, the Niners' first-round pick, which is 31, and a third-round pick. And then instantly give Brandon Ayuk $100 million. Lock him up. Make him happy. Mm. There's your number one receiver. Do you agree with the Justin Pugh plan?
No. No.
Why not?
Because it's $100 million versus whatever the minimum, the rookie deal is for whoever you draft at number six. Think about that.
But it's also a guy who may not be as good as Brandon Ayuk, and you get the latter part of the first round to make another pick.
If the draft plays out like everybody thinks it's going to play out, meaning three quarterbacks taken, and or maybe even four, the Giants are going to have a damn good wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
One of the... There's like eight in this draft that are really interesting.
They're going to have one of the top two or three wide receivers in the draft.
Right, so they could get... And I don't... I mean... I read this article and from The Athletic a couple weeks ago, maybe a week ago, about the bust potential from, I think we talked about this, the bust potential of first-round wide receivers. And it's actually higher than most people think, right? It's the bust potential, which is just a overdrafted player or just a flat-out bust, is like 60-something percent.
Mm.
Like, it's really hard.
Doesn't that make you want to trade for Ayuk then?
I mean...
Based on that?
That's empirical, though. Like, empirical, like, statistics in reality... are hard to reconcile when the first three wide receivers in this draft are Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze, and Malik Nabers. Three guys who I think, I don't want to say they're bust-proof because that would be, because you never know with injuries or whatever, they feel as bust-proof as you can be
right.
at wide receiver. And the Giants are almost certainly going to get one of them. So one of those guys who's young, 22 years old, is going to be a star for 5-6 years or star for the first 5 years of his contract, and then you sign him 5 years later, as opposed to a guy you trade for, give up assets, and then sign him to a $100 million deal? That doesn't make sense.
Interesting.
Doesn't make sense to me.
You signed off on the Pugh idea?
No, I signed off on Pugh being as bad as Dave Gettleman, if that's the idea. I've thought long and hard about this.
For everything, and I like Brandon Ayuk. I really do.
I do too. But by the way, he's also not Justin Jefferson. So just the idea of you may not get a receiver as good as Brandon Ayuk, you might get one way better at a lower cost for 4 years. And then you're only going back to 31. What if Penix or whoever is taken? To me, I'd rather sit at six than have to do some kind of trade like that.
I just don't think it economically makes sense. Because now you're paying a huge... Like, you already did that with...
With Burns.
With Burns, exactly, on the defensive side of the ball. So now you're going to do it again offensively for a guy who's really good.
And at that point, 4 years older... I mean, when you're thinking about the Giants window and everything.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. There's too many good wide receivers.
So what you're trying to say is Justin Pugh should not quit his day job.
No.
And he's
I don't think the Giants are going to re-sign him. They have. I mean, look, he was invaluable last year. I'm not discounting Justin Pugh.
Then they asked him to play left tackle. Remember that?
I know.
Yeah.
And he was actually okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Left tackle. He was invaluable to them last year. But they traded for, or they signed a three guys in free agency. Two of them are guards, and they have two second-round draft picks. And
only one now.
Oh, yeah. Well, a third-rounder and a fifth-rounder now still.
Right.
So, they're deep already. Now, those guys aren't proven, but I just don't think his future is here.